we're going to open it pretty much straight up for questions. One of them I'd like to talk about the structure of the films, the physical structure of the films. The other one is about talking a bit more about the narratives, because the interviews, you use a lot of, obviously you use narrative, you use a lot of interviews, but then that's quite a complicated thing to set up, isn't it? You have to decide on your chosen audience or sample, and then you have to find the people, and what exactly were you asking them? Because often the questions elicit the answers that you want, it's not something you can just throw away, is it? It's a complex thing, setting up a structure of interviews.
It is and it isn't. I mean, I try and do it as casually as possible. So I take the view that it's not a social science survey, so I don't have to get a representative sample. That all I need is something to make a film out of. So, for example, with the film, the military film, I interviewed about 10 people in the end. But I used predominantly two. And there was a moment when I interviewed quite a young woman whose mother was a lieutenant. I've forgotten the nomenclature now, but she was a lieutenant colonel, I think. Does anyone know about these things? Anyway, she was quite high up in the army, her mother. She was very young. And then I actually interviewed a student I was working with whose father was in the military and quite high up. And when I interviewed the older woman, I suddenly thought, that's it, that's the film, those two women. You know, so some of it is quite intuitive as well. And I have some kind of, I have questions. The questions are different depending on the film, because of course the questions are to do with what you're trying to draw out. But then I'll always riff on it anyway. And my questions really are about getting them to talk, because I don't have a clear idea. When I make a film, and the reason why I find working with interviews so interesting is that it allows me to make a film where I actually don't know the answer. I don't know what's going to happen. I just know the questions I have, or the areas that I'm interested in within that subject matter. And then depending on what people say, you know, that what people say generates the film. So it's much a kind of, again, a negotiation between what they give me and then what I make with it. So when I first started off, I'd ask questions, and the film was quite, so you think you can tell, was very much a kind of, it was two persons, both speaking a lot, you know, two camera interviews. And, you know, the more I've made films, the more they've been detached from the person, and the more about the idea of something rather than, you know, any particular individual. So it's about what's in the ether almost. What people say becomes part of the ingredients. And the people I interview know that, you know, so it's not like, and I tell them how I work.
So it's not like you're doing a documentary.
No.
They are material in a sense.
It's material.
But they're allowed to engage as a set of ideas.
And what's really important about interviews is that the person you're interviewing trusts you. And they trust what you're doing. So even though I'm not being subservient to their narrative and what I do, you know, I have humility towards them and their story and what they do and what they're trying to tell me. So it's quite a kind of...
So would that go on over quite a long time? I mean, obviously one interview doesn't necessarily do that. So you talk about trust. Trust doesn't build up quite so quickly.
Well, actually, most of them are just one interview. Yeah. You meet. It's amazing how people just want to tell their stories, you know. And I, you know, as I said, I don't normally need that many interviews. But I think, I guess people could just tell from the way I approach them that, you know. And I always say I will show them the film before it goes public, so they have the opportunity to have something taken out. And I tell them when I interview them that if there's anything they don't want me to put in the film, to just tell me. Either at the time, or they can tell me afterwards. I say to them very clearly that I'll put in anything you tell me, unless you tell me not to. So we kind of both know what the score is. So it's not I mean, a lot of people do a lot of artists who make kind of work that's taken from a sort of documentary methodology, like Shona Illingworth, for example, they will spend years building up trust and interviewing people over a period of time. For me, that's not what matters. It's not about getting the real story.
So what does matter?
What matters is that moment of encounter, that moment between us, and what they tell me. And whatever they tell me, I'll make use out of. And it might not be the truth.
No.
But what is the truth anyway?
So in a sense, it's better that it's not quite a chance encounter, but it's a more immediate encounter rather than...
Yeah, I don't go up to people in the street and say, okay, so what do you feel about... It's not vox pop in that way.
No, but you went to the military base, for instance, and looked for people to...
Yeah. Yeah, I do it by word of mouth. I always do it by word of mouth. Mm. So there's already that level of trust to start with. It's not that I couldn't go back, but I normally get enough from one. You know, it's amazing how much you can reveal in actually very little.
Mm. It's also interesting that people want to talk. Mm. Do they like the fact they're talking to a filmmaker?
I don't know. I think people just like to tell their story. You know, I mean, Gillian Waring did that work years and years ago where she advertised for people to tell their secrets to her. And she got thousands, didn't she? She got loads of people.
Yes.
I think people just like to tell their stories. And I like to tell their stories too. So,
I have a question, but I'm not going to ask it. I'm going to ask instead if I can just pass on a tale about Anwar Shenzer, or Mr. Shenzer. He was my sister's teacher when she was at school.
Oh, wow.
So the job he had was at the comprehensive that she went to, and she invited him for tea one day and came home and said to Mum and Dad, I invited my art teacher for tea. And they didn't know that he was Pakistani origin, and they were really, really racist people. And he arrived for tea, this kind of
poor guy.
Intelligent man, and sat with this pair of fucking Versailles, and behaved immaculately. And he had a profound effect on my sister's life. He just changed the world for her. And she applied to art school because of him. And my dad's response is, what do you want to go to fucking art school for? Because women can't be artists. And because she went to art school, she's a lot older than me, then I had the courage to go to art school. And when we saw that, oh, I'm getting a bit tearful. It's just the fact that, I guess he definitely made her an artist, and he played a hand in me saying, you know, so that I'm an artist. And yeah, so that's my anecdote.
Yeah, no, that's lovely. And horrible at the same time. Yeah. You know, the racism is, but that's amazing. And he was, I spent quite a lot of time with his wife who survives him. And he sounds from her like to have been a really lovely guy, actually, and a very good teacher, as well as a really interesting artist. So thank you for that.
You can have a question as well if you like.
It was about, I really love your work, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
My question is not boring. Well, it's not boring. It's about I've seen the military film before. I saw it in Newcastle. And I was struck then by and I think quite a lot of your work, you showed preference for 4x3 ratio, which I don't use widescreen at all. I always use 4x3. And now, even considering like a square ratio, like for Fritz Lang, and I just wondered if you could talk about that, the preference for that format and where it comes from. Because actually, it's quite hard to do now because all everything
Sets up. Yeah, I know, it's really. I think it partly comes from the kind of films I like to watch, which tend to be on that format. But I think it also comes from my painterly background, you know, the rectangle and the way, you know, the divisions of the rectangle. I mean, that piece, Deep England, you know, all the stuff out of the window, looking out the window, was very much about these kind of abstract divisions of the rectangle, really. And I mean, you can do that on a, you know, you can have a long, wide canvas, but there's something about those proportions that allow me to explore compositional, the composition of the image, of the moving image, if you like.
And is it frame this page as well?
Yeah. Well, that's, I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, no, that's that's good. I'm quite interested in the piece I didn't show because I didn't have time for some time now. Is very much exploring that kind of relationship between painting and video, or painting and film, really, but with video. And I do a lot of that work in private that I don't tend to show so much. Mainly, I think, because when I send it out, people don't seem to really get it. And I think that's partly because the main paradigm for film and video at the moment is very, you know, high quality production values, very, very composed, very so to kind of launch into this kind of blurry sort of jumping image is like they just, I think people think, who the hell is she? She doesn't know what she's doing. And of course I do know what I'm doing, you know, and I do that very deliberately, you know, as part of the deflationary and I'm just very attracted to a kind of the sort of unfinished image, the awkward edit, and I think it's partly to do with my punk background, as well as my painterly background. The thing of the things not being quite right. There is a fetish of that as well. I'm aware of in this time of HD, but I think that. A lot of the film work that I look at is a bit like that as well, you know.
You mentioned the kitchen sink aesthetic, and you kind of touched on it before, saying that maybe your generation had to kind of explain having a child and working. I have two young children, and I don't feel like I need to mention that. I know I just mentioned it, but I'm just wondering how that affects how you work, because you kind of said you filmed it when your son was asleep. And is it relevant? Is it relevant now, or is it just because of the generation you come from?
Well, I think that part of it's the generation I come from, and part of it's just the conditions of making. I mean, I think that Linda Nochlin's, you know, Why There Are No Great Women Artists text from 1970 or whenever it was, I think does still stand to some extent, that the condition of being an artist in a material sense is having enough money to have a studio, being able to commit yourself to it like all day and halfway through the night, being able to go to previews that all are between 6 and 8. You know, there's like loads and loads of things that serve to exclude women with children who are the main carers. This can also apply to men who are the main carers. But, you know, my partner is, you know, co-parenting, probably doing, you know, more like 65%, and I'm doing the other 35% at the moment. But so I'm really lucky. But even then, you know, you're still having to juggle, oh, can I go out tonight, or should you go out tonight, you know, to the previews, which are so important to an artist being sort of networked in. So I think that still stands to a large extent, and that you often find that those artists who do extremely well, who have kids, either have a husband who's wealthy or have private money, they can afford nannies and au pairs and all that kind of thing. So, you know, if you're struggling financially and you can't afford, you know, babysitters, etc., etc., then it's really hard. So there's that. But also, I mean, it changes your life, you know, for better or worse or whatever, so that you can't spend hours and hours in the studio making whatever you make. So that, you know, when I made You're Joking, for example, I was living in London, my partner was working in Wolverhampton, he'd stay in Wolverhampton between Monday and Thursday night, so I'd be on my own with a child, a very small child, 4 days of the week, you know.
you know, he had nursery for about, you know, one day, that's all we could afford. And that was it, you know. So, you know, when do you make the work? So you have to kind of incorporate it, you know. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it just changes the nature of the work. And I think that's okay. So that thing about the kitchen sink is really about, and I think that doesn't just apply to women with children, I think that applies to money, you know, so it's a class issue as well. I think there's kind of lots of issues around what kind of, there's politics around what kind of work you make. And I suppose I was just flagging up that was the case. I think it's really hard to have a child without a job and without, you know, enough childcare and all the rest of it. And make work as well on top of that. You know, but it can be done, but it's hard. So, that's all right. But also, I think that women in my generation, that was the other thing. I mean, I'm in my mid-50s. I think that, and women older than me, we were quite scared to have children as artists because, or I was, because I thought, how can I make work as an artist with a child? I can't see how it would work. And I also was worried, you know, my mum worked, but, you know, everything about her life was about being a mum and a wife, and I just thought, I don't want to be that woman, you know, I want to be a woman with something meaningful in my life that's not about a child and a husband. And so I was also frightened of being swallowed up by this, like, model that my mother, you know, lived, which was like, suddenly I'd be this wife and mum and nothing else. So I think that there was a lot of kind of psychic issues as well as, or psychological issues as well as, you know, but I think a lot of women of my, is there any women of my age around? I think a lot of women of my age had that fear. So I didn't have my son till I was 40. So, yeah, anyway, probably enough about that. But thank you for that question. So that last question.
Hi.
I
was just thinking about how you use film techniques for your artwork. And over the years, having watched films and stuff, I've been to notice this kind of race to perfect the techniques in films. It's like you watch one film and then a couple of years later it looks even better, and then when you watch the original film, you can tell it's dated. And I was just thinking about your films. Do you think as technology continues to evolve, your films will as you use that equipment, or will you continue to use the same equipment so that it does provide that dated?
Well, one of the films I didn't show was a film called The Straggle, which was the first part of the trilogy of the military one. And in that film, I used a range of cameras, and I often use a range of cameras. So I used some a kind of hand, a little tiny portable HD camera, and I used a really expensive, you know, HD camera that I borrowed for. I was teaching at Goldsmiths at the time, so I used their studio and their cameras from their communications department, which were like really high spec, and I used my old mini DV Sony from like 2000 camera as well. So I used all those different cameras, and one of the reasons I did that was because I was very interested in the kind of texture and quality of those different lenses and those different kinds of images. So you'd get this really velvety, beautiful studio shots of this guy who was performing to no audience. He was a magician. And then you'd get something I filmed on my Sony that was in situ as a documentary of him doing a performance with a small group of people. And then there was another, you know, bits that I'd filmed on, you know, my iPhone and my little camera. And I'd juxtapose all these different things. And also really degraded films that I got off the internet as well. So there were all these different textures. And I quite enjoyed that. But inevitably, art, you know, you have to go along with technology to some extent,
you know, I don't use 60 mil film, for example. I mean, that's partly because that's really expensive, but it's also hard to use and get hold of and stuff. But I might do. I mean, I'm still using really old cameras, but it might become impossible to. But I think what matters more than the technology you use is, like, you know, what you're trying to say and how you do it and whether you can just get on and do it. So in a way, I could use really high-spec cameras and it wouldn't bother me if someone dropped one into my lap. But I don't go out of my way to, just as much as I don't go out of my way to use my older cameras, I just use them because I feel very comfortable with them and, you know, they're easy to use and they're cheap. You know, so it's the carrier is not the most important consideration for me. But I know many artists, you know, the Arts Council spending like loads and loads of money on artist filmmakers, you know, using teams and, you know, all sorts of things. And that, you know, I don't want to go down that road.
To be honest, that observation I made in one of the videos, I think it might be in Deep England, where every, the image broke up seemed to add a layer of texture and it made me feel like I was looking at painting.
Oh, okay.
So I feel like if you don't use that, just with a smooth film, you know, that's really high HD or something, it's one surface.
Yeah. Thank you. No, that's great to know. Yeah, I mean, I think the painterliness of the older image, I really like the slightly fuzziness of it. I do like that aesthetically. Thank you.
I'd like to ask one more question.
Yeah.
Squeeze the last bit. And it was about the structure of the films, a lot of different structures in those films, and I was wondering whether that happens purely in the edit or whether that's part of the initial idea. Big range, a lot of people present a lot of films that are in the same format, but yours are all, there was the final one with the screens moving across and the beautiful still shot of the planes going over, very cinematic. Do you start with that conceived idea of what the film might be? How does that
I think it builds through. I mean, I always like the fragment, and I always like the detail, and I always like the awkward. So those things tend to be fairly constant. But
they're very recognisably different, aren't they?
Yeah.
In terms of their structure.
But I'm quite interested in how. But that so those build up partly through thinking about they all build up differently, and it's partly to do with the concept that I'm working with, or the conceptual framework that I'm dealing with, and how that develops, the interviews, the sites that I'm working with, and they kind of all develop sort of symbiotically, really. I mean, I try to convey that to some extent with, you know, in talking about some of the films, like you're joking about how that structure came out through this idea of this retelling, for example. The last one, the one I made with Janet of the aeroplane, it was really important that was cinematic because it, and that was filmed with a really, you know, high-end camera.
It was lovely to see it on a big screen,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Great to see it on a big screen. Those are really heavy HD files, and And that camera was kind of stretched to capacity to try and focus on these planes that were coming in. But it was really important that was a panoramic because that was partly about the kind of the stack, these kind of ongoing planes. But this, you know, and also the sunset, the romance of the sunset, but also the thinking about the idea of the end of that kind of technology and how we need to rethink technology because of global warming, and, you know, so, but also my dad died during the making of that film, so that idea of, like, over and out. So it was also a lament. So there were lots and lots of different things go into thinking about the structure. So it's, but I think, you know, it's like making a painting. You know, you have, like, the possibility of lots of different colours and lots of different compositions, and you try and bring them together in a way that speaks through those materials.
And I added little supplementaries. Is the what you're thinking about how the audience are going to consume it, in terms of whether it's going to be on small monitors or on headphones. You talked a little bit about that. Or, you know, and the piece for the Over and Out was very much ended up as a DVD, didn't it?
So, I do think about that, and it's quite important how they're exhibited, and I do quite like some of the monitors are more important for some of them. You know, a big image is more important. It kind of depends again on the film.
Restoratively.
Restoratively.
Installation. You're thinking about whether it's going to be a standalone piece or are you working with other elements?
Yeah, I mean, I often start off, when I made this trilogy, I often thought, every one I thought, no, it's going to be a multi-screen installation. Mm. They've all ended up as single screen. Yeah.
So do you think people are going to sit, is the intention that they sit and watch the...
I get more and more irritated by films in galleries. And I think that there's something about the condition of watching a film in a comfy seat and you submit to being there for a certain amount of time. The thing of you standing in a box within a gallery thinking, I don't know how long this film is going to last for. I don't know when it began and when it's finishing. There's all this other work I think I want to see as well. After, how can you focus on the work that's in front of you when you've got all that going on in your head? So you dip in for like 20 seconds and think, do I like it or don't I like it? If you like it, you might stay there for 2 minutes. If you don't like it, you're there for 20 seconds and you're off to the next thing. That's not a way to watch film. So, you know, You're Joking is a gallery piece. It's 2 minutes. And all of them have shown in galleries, and I think they've all shown in cinemas as well. But I think the work I really like watching is work that you would watch at a cinema.
I think that's a lovely place to and what a fantastic rich talk. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.